No, I've walked a team out of Wembley, like, I got nowhere near
it. You're wounded as well.
Oh, yeah, I mean, completely. I broke down the next day. Like, I was absolutely devastated. You know, I'm not, you know, like, you know, showing off to sort of to hide that. You know, I broke down in tears the next day. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. But then we got to go back to Wembley the next week. My last win for Barrow was against my best mate, Matt Sadler at Warsaw. And he said something after about 2 minutes, and I wanted to volley his head off him. I was like, I'm, even though he's my best mate from 4 years old, I'm here to win. Do you know what I mean? And I think I'm exactly the same. Stern John's in the middle of the pitch. Dealey's out wide. Anyway, the ball's come in. It's missed Dealey, and Stern John's gone off for the header. I think it's clipped off Mo Konyic, who ultimately, I think he played for Coventry at the time, but he's flicked it on and it's just fouled him on the edge of the box. And I couldn't have hit it any sweeter, really. I think he took a slight nick, but it weren't, you know, deviating from the top corner anyway. I think Michael Johnson, the old blue nose here, to be fair, I think it nicked off him slightly. So, yeah, just went straight in the top corner. Pandemonium then, because it was my second goal of my career. I'd scored against Nottingham Forest early, but this was a... Just seemed like a big goal. The day, you know, Jimmy Hill was singing all that before the game.
He's in front of your fans as well.
Yes, it was, yeah. I enjoyed my time there. Loved Leinoring. Loved the fans, people. We went from 19th to just missing out of the playoffs in 8 months. We played some unbelievable football. Harry Kane played for us. Tom Carroll, come from Tottenham. Had a real good time. Beat a championship club in the third round, beat Norwich in the third round, the FA Cup, beat Swansea away in the fourth round, and we got Arsenal at home, drew 1-1. We scored a last minute equaliser and got a replay at the Emirates, which is fucking brilliant.
Before we get into this, we're doing over 1 million engagements a month, but most of you aren't subscribed. If you enjoy the content, hit subscribe and follow us on socials. It'll make such a massive difference. Cheers.
It's great to have you on. We're rolling, so we don't normally do instructions, but welcome along, Andrew Wing. Wingo, how are you?
I'm very well. Yourself?
Brilliant, mate. Yeah, good. Great. So, yeah, you've Birmingham born and bred.
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up, and what was your upbringing like?
Yeah, good, to be fair. Just sort of standard, really. Grew up in Yardley, just off the Cove Road. You know, where McDonald's was and the old Good Companions, I think it was the Harry Ramsdens and all that. So just right by there, Gilbertstone Park. I think we started in, my old man was a caretaker, Archers of Grimshaw. So firstly, we lived there for a little bit at Grimshaw, because the old man was caretaker there for donkey's years. It was great.
Cause, we went Grimshaw.
Did you? Yeah. Well, it was great because when we moved away, and then I think we went to Shardend, then Shirley, and then we, about 5-6 years old, then we settled in Yardley. But it was great. My old man still worked there. He just used the swimming pool there. The AstroTurf, like the indoor football pitch.
Yeah.
There's like a cupboard with every sports equipment going. And I pretty much had that to myself. I had the swimming pool to myself. Shouldn't really be saying this.
Well, it's not Home Alone 2.
He's not there anymore, so it's
not Home Alone 2. Once it locked up, you just went out and done whatever you wanted.
It was unbelievable. Like, I had the swimming pool. The Astro and all that sort of stuff. I just used it.
One is just at the monitor, sorry. Photo.
Yeah. Yeah, so you obviously used the Astro and stuff. It was class. So then we obviously ended up settling in Yardley.
Did you, so there's that part of you used to just get the little training sessions and get the cones out and the sports?
Yeah, to be fair. Well, yeah, I think so. It was just, it was a great. I think I just took to football. We're a massive football family. And obviously just took to football straight away. And that was kind of the start of the upbringing then. I think then the old man had he run a football club called Goldliner. We used to play at Marston Green Rec, the cricket club there. Then before I moved to Arden Forest after that and spent many years there. But yeah, that's pretty much the start of it, really.
Yeah, you've been in and around us then for
pretty much, yeah.
A younger, you're 43?
42.
Yeah. 42. Yeah. So like, yeah, similar.
Yeah.
So you started off at Arden Forest?
Yeah, so I think I joined there at... I mean, it was good because I started Goldline. It doesn't exist anymore, I don't think. But I was 6 years old and playing for the under nines. So I was quite tall for my age and kind of just blended in, really. So I think I always knew at that, or always knew at that kind of stage I was half decent at football. You never know what you're going to turn out like. And then about 6-7, I went to should have said 6-7. That's a kids thing. It drives
at least do the hands.
Drives me mental at this. Yeah. With the kids, but so they're about 7 years old. I went to Arnold Forest. Pete Foles was a manager. And I actually loved it. My parents loved it. Barry Johnson, bowled Bill and Ball on the Cove Road. His son Craig played as well. So pretty much every Sunday we're back at the Bill and Ball. Back at the Bill and Ball after that, and he was just I think the parents loved it more than like we did. I think it's more for them. They had a great time. To be fair, but yeah, I had a really good upbringing from there. Obviously, some really good players. A lot of good players have come from Arden Forest and gone on to bigger and better things professionally and stuff. So yeah, it was a really good upbringing for me.
Where was the when did the opportunity first come about with the Trolls? Is it right you had Trolls with Derby and Blues?
Yeah, so I initially. Originally I went to my first one was Birmingham City when I was 10 or 10, 11. And it just shows how much Blues have come on since then. I think it got disbanded at the time. So I was on trial there. It was a good six months, I think it was. Or it was a long time anyway.
Right.
And it got disbanded. I think the academy kind of quit, basically.
Yeah.
I think I can't remember when it was. It must have been
just before.
So this is what, obviously, what, 94, 93, 94?
Just before, that would have been Barry.
Yeah.
So I don't know what I can't obviously remember that far back.
That's probably sold all the training gear, didn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean we trained at remember training at Nine Star School in Acox Green. They got a little AstroTurf there, still there, my little, and he's there tomorrow night actually training. But it kind of got disbanded from there. I think we played a couple of games and then it gone. So that got I don't know what happened. I think it come back a year after or whatever. And most of them kids who were like, you know, Matt Sadler was there at the time. Went back and it's been brilliant since at the Blues. But I obviously went back to my Sunday League team, Arden Forest, and carried on. And then I think it was 12, 13 then. I was doing really well in kind of like five a-sides at the end of the year, you know, when you, again, parents are there with the marquees up, getting plastered all day with barbecue. I think it was more for them than it was for us. But it was great in terms of that. I think Cov and Derby at the same time kind of wanted me, which is brilliant. But I was training, I think, Wednesday, Friday at Coventry, Tuesday, Thursday at Derby. So fair play to my old dear mainly. He used to obviously take me every night to these to trial. Didn't really like Derby. I don't know if it was because it was a bit further away, but I weren't really feeling it. I enjoyed Cov. And eventually got into Cov when I was about 12, 13, which, and then I obviously broke into the first team from there then.
Good age, that is, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, because I brilliant, because I kind of enjoyed my football with Arden Forest. Absolutely loved it. Yeah.
We've had it on here before, we've had conversations, but it's getting earlier and earlier.
Yeah, six, seven, eight now. Five, yeah, six, even seven, more, yeah. You know,
keep saying 6-7. Keep saying it. It's four times.
It's getting 12, earlier.
11-12.
And it puts a lot of pressure. Yeah, and it puts a lot of pressure on parents as well. There, I know parents. I hear them. My lads have had, you know, they just love football. They're never gonna, you know, watch this, but they're never gonna be good enough to probably make it. But they enjoy playing football. They love it. And you hear parents, don't you? And I think it's more their pipe dream more than anything.
Trying to live vicariously for the kids.
Than the kids. And it puts a lot of pressure on parents anyway, 8 years old, you know, taking, you know, 3-4 times a week, you're travelling up and down the country. You know, by the time you get to 15, 16, they've probably had enough of it and don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So I mom had perfect timing, really. I had so much fun playing with my mates for how many years. And then I think I was ready then to kind of, you know, play for a club. You know, I was obviously good enough.
Was you feeling the pressure, or is you still enjoyed it?
No, I think you do a little bit. I can't really remember too much, but I think you feel a little bit. I was just enjoying it. I think I was decent. Obviously, the pressure then comes when you're 14, 15, when you know scholarships around the corner. That's when I think pressure comes. And it's tough as well, because at the same time, GCSEs, so there's pressure on that as well. It's like your parents are like, that might not work, so you've got to concentrate on that. And I wasn't academically brilliant. Do you know what I mean? So I'm thinking, I'd run
hormones and girls. And
absolutely. I was still ginger at the time. I tried to go strawberry blonde, but it still weren't happening. So I was trying to do everything with my hair to try and change it, but it still didn't work. But then your mates are going out to parks, and you're kind of missing out on that a little bit because they're going to Rosie's in Solihull, on a Thursday night where obviously
pint bottle, all shop. That
sort of stuff. And you kind of miss out all that sort of stuff. So you're hoping that, I'm sacrificing that friends really, because they're all going out every night. I'm sacrificing to forge a career out of it. And luckily it worked out for me in the end. But at that time, there's a lot of pressure with all that as well, isn't there? So it's a tough time for youngsters anyway.
So, what are your memories? What are your good memories of Cov and playing up there? And obviously we'll go on to talk about your absolute boomer at the last one at Highfield Road.
I loved it, to be fair. Real good football club.
Like an honest family club.
We were Yardley, so it's only 20-25 minutes up the Cov Road. Perfect. Beautiful. Perfect for us, or for me anyway. It's brilliant, loved it. Like I said, got to 15-16, now it's about scholarship. I thought I was nailed on, to be fair. I mean, we had, in my team at the time, we had Peter Whittingham, again, who's sadly passed away, fantastic player. At 16, I don't know what happened there, he kind of went to the Villa from there. I don't know if he weren't going to get a scholar or what. So I was in the same team as him then, and I got released at that time from Cov, totally out of the blue. And again, that kind of element of pressure going back to school then.
And everyone's like,
yeah, what's happening? And I've been released. And it's kind of like, I don't know, you've not let anyone down, but you're kind of like, and you're a little bit.
It's devastating.
Then I'm back in the school team, back in the district team. I remember the first district team after I got released, I started on the bench and I was like, what has happened to me? One minute I'm thinking I'm going to get a scholarship at Coventry City. They were still in the Premier League at the time. Brilliant. And then, the news I didn't expect. I think because they're bringing like 10, 11 Irish lads in, all on decent money as well. They had like, they had something with a club in Ireland, and they were bringing 10, 11 Irish lads in, and they're only taking two or three local lads, even though we've come through the system. And unfortunately, I was one of them not to get anything. So going back, I went back to a district game, started on a bench. Luckily, it was 0-0. Come on at half time, we won 2-0. I think I scored both goals. So that kind of made me happier. But then I had to go to exit trials at Lillishaw, trials. I done really well, I scored there. So I got a few 10, 11 clubs looking, wanting me or go on trial. And then I had to trial at Notts County. Again, one of the coaches there pulled my mum and said, he's only good at school. I think he needs to stick to school. I don't think he's going to make a professional footballer. Yeah. So I think this has kind of forged my career really, because it always comes back to proving people wrong. And I think that's how I've gone through life and football really. So basically I was like, absolutely. Fuck you. I scored two in that game. I thought I had to hear that after. I'm thinking, what is happening here? So then I was in Colchester. I was staying at the academy manager's house. His son played there, and they were desperate to have me. I was going to pretty much sign for them. Colchester was 3 hours away.
I think down the Cov Road, is it?
No, it's not down the Cov Road. And luckily enough, I got a phone call from Trevor Gould at Coventry City. Said, I think we've made a mistake. Would you come back? And I was like, fucking two, right? I'm literally three and a half hours down the road. Cov's all I've known really for the last 4 or 5 years. I think because I've done well at the exit trials, I had a few clubs sniffing around. They said
we've had someone got shooing for that.
I literally don't know what happened and why. I'd love to know why they changed the mind or why they come back to me, because you never really hear that, do you?
It's got to be someone from Cov at the exit trials having a look, and they're like,
yeah,
we'll sign him.
Chatting to other scouts or what, I don't know. But it was a strange one. Got a phone call, said, would you come back? And I was like, at the time, I felt sorry for the guy at Colchester because he was like, you know, desperate to kind of bring me there. You know, he'd done everything to try and get me there and stuff. But again, up the Cov Road, half hour down, it's all I've known.
Yeah, I'm sure they understand that as well. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly objective, absolutely, yeah. And so then I signed a 2-year scholar there, which is brilliant. Went and lived in the Sky Blue Lodge. It's where they still train now. It's trained at, like, we lived at the training ground. It was, we had, it's brilliant, to be fair. Even though it was only half hour up the road, obviously mum and dad are working, couldn't take me there every day. I didn't want to get the 900 bus every day. It takes about an hour to Cov on that. Oh, it's ridiculous. So I stayed there with all the youth team, all the Irish lads that had come over. Obviously, literally went downstairs and you had jobs to do. Obviously, you don't do that now. Some fantastic players at the time. So I'm sort of living and breathing. You got your Robbie Keane's, you've got, you know, Richard Shaw's, all them type of players. Gary McAllister's top players are playing at, you know, Gordon Strachan was the manager at the time. Magnus Hedman's in goal. You know, they've got Gary Breen, got top players. And I'm living at the training ground. I walk downstairs and the change rooms are there. The pitches are outside. There's nothing around it as well. So there's no kind of distractions. You know, one player had a car, we'd sometimes go, I don't know, to a shop or whatever.
Okay, can have a look.
Yeah, pretty much. There's two. I mean, my assistant now, who's followed me the last couple of years, Craig Peed, his dad was the kit man. So every 2 weeks, the kit man, George, and George Mackey, the under-19s coach, would take us to Showcase Cinema just to get us out the lodge, basically. So every two weeks, that was our kind of get out of the that environment, to be fair. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because we
stopped going a bit stir crazy.
Yeah, you're stuck there. I mean, I was lucky. I went home weekend, so I was back Saturday night. But then obviously, and then the lads who stayed at the lodge had a curfew. First year's got an 11 o'clock curfew. Second year's got a 12 o'clock curfew. There's one time, funny enough, it was my 18th birthday party. My mum had threw me a party uptown. I think at the Rose Pub or something in town, not far from her work. And a lot of the lads had gone out into Coventry and no one was there. No one got back till like 1-2 o'clock in the morning. Someone had called the George Mackey, Scottish guy, Gordon Strachan's best mate. Brutal, ruthless. One of the best coaches and one of the top blokes I ever worked with. But at the time, even if I heard his voice now, he'd give me the shivers. I'd be scared of him. He got a phone call and took the minibus into town to go and find the lads at 2 o'clock in the morning at Cov. and then I think he rounded a few of them up, gone back. And then a couple come back in a taxi, stumbling out of a taxi and all sorts. So from that day, we all had a curfew. So even if I went home, I had a phone call at 11 o'clock from Steve Grizovic. From Steve Grizovic, absolute Cov legend. He's phoning my mum and dad. Can I speak to Andy, please, at 11 o'clock at night, just to make sure I was in, because the lads had obviously...
Steve Grizovic?
He was our under-17s. He was my 17s manager.
That's a mad thing to think that. That was one of his tasks. At 11 o'clock, he's probably waiting to get to bed rather than just make this phone call.
And then it was Monday morning. I think Gary McAllister at the time was the manager then, and he rounded us all in and just obviously volleyed us and said about obviously being professional and all that sort of stuff. I mean, he's manning the Irish lads, to be fair. I mean, they love a good drink. They said our drinks in their wardrobes and all sorts and stuff. But you know, they're great lads, but that, you know, they loved the drink, loved the night out. And so we had a bit of a curfew then, so we couldn't go out or anything. Like, even when I come back home, I made sure that we always had to be in by 11 o'clock. When I was a second year, it had to be 12 o'clock. So it was a pretty tough school. Like, obviously, you're only 17, but you couldn't do anything with your hair. You had to shave, make sure you're cleanly shaven, all that sort of stuff. Black boots, all that sort of stuff. You had jobs. It was pretty, it was a pretty tough upbringing in terms of
military.
Yeah, it was like routine. But I think, again, top coaches, top people, even though you were scared of them at the time, you look back at them now and thinking, you know, they've put you in good stead, you know what I mean? And they produced a lot of footballers. I think Youth Cup, they got to the final twice. You know, players like Gary McSheffrey that were here, who's come through that kind of system. Jay Boffer, all them sort of type of players. He was a real Callum Davenport, Chris Kirkland's, you know, some top players have come through there, and that was the upbringing we had. He was pretty ruthless at the time, but you know, you look back at it and go, you know, it's put me in good stead since. To be fair,
feel hot, a little bit hard done by. Oh, I've got to do this, but then
I think when you're in it,
like, we've lost a little bit of that with the youth. I don't know a lot about the youth.
Yeah, 100%.
I assume it's nothing like that.
Nah, but I think like Coventry, when I retired, I went back as sort of full circle as an 18s coach.
Yeah.
And they're at separate sites now. They don't live. They live in like, if they're not local, they'll stay in like a house with a couple. But it's not like everyone's in the same training ground. You've got jobs or all of that. Be like Birmingham City now. They're separate to the first team. So how do you know how to be a professional footballer if you don't see it day in day out? I lived and breathed it. Yeah. It was downstairs. It was, you know, I wasn't going to bed at night at 9 o'clock because there was towels in the dryer that I had to make sure were dry to put in their pigeonholes for the next day. You know, that's the upbringing we kind of get. It was pretty ruthless, and I don't think they see that now. And I think they probably get money too early. Then now they go on loan to sort of non-league clubs or lower league clubs, and it's a shock to them. Whereas then it was a real good upbringing, and it made us who we was. And I think it made me have a bit of a longevity in my career because I weren't surprised at anything then. Whereas now I think they're mollycoddled massively. Can't get jobs.
Your day to day with the first team as well, you're tapping into resources like Gary McAllister, Strachan, just being around them and seeing you take bits of that moving forward and skipping forward into your coaching, into the way you...
Oh, 100%. You know, you had to knock on the door to go into if there's a first team player in the room, in a changing room, and you've just opened the door and got in, they'll bat you pretty much literally at times as well back then. You had to knock on the door, just little things. You know, looking at Gordon Strachan, you know, again, a good thing of being ginger, he was ginger, so he kind of relied on me. So he asked me to do jobs, and which was great for me at the time. It gave me confidence, like the manager's asking me to go and basically he's lucky going fetch codes, go fetch balls, or go and do this for him. But at the time, I was like, he's the first team manager, that's brilliant. It was a brilliant upbringing. You know, I was really lucky to live in a training ground. Like, no one gets that opportunity. And it was, it definitely helped me a lot for my career.
What were your highlights from playing in that team? Because was it over 100 appearances?
So I was lucky. Gary McAllister. I didn't have an agent at the time. So, Gary McAllister is my first manager. He gave me my debut, you know, playing with him as well. He was still a player at the time as well. So to play him with Gary McAllister, what a legend, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Even when he went to Liverpool and they'd done the quadruple one.
Unbelievable.
Head and shoulders.
Unbelievable. And he was still, like, he's 40. Yeah, and I played a five-a-side the other day and I can't feel my legs. I'm absolutely agony. He was 41. He's the fittest guy there. Best player on the pitch. And I'm 18. I'm playing with him. I played 15 games through that summer. Come the summer, I'm still on what, 75 quid a week at that point, a scholar wage. I've played 15 games in the Championship. So obviously come the summer, he pulls me in and, you know, I haven't got an agent, so my mum comes with me. You know, this is the contract. This is what we think's fair. You know, I'm not stitching you up. You know, you've been brilliant for us. You know, we're delighted with you. And I just went, yeah, absolutely. Let me just sign. You know, I think it's 400 quid. Which Championship now, what these are on, you know, I've played 15 games at 75 quid. Now I'm 400 quid playing week in, week out.
Actually bumping a contract
in a Championship. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean. It's ridiculous. I think because I've come through the system as well, you always don't seem to get as much as probably what other players are earning.
They're bringing people in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then unfortunately he left, obviously, you know, his wife sort of passed away, which was obviously gutting for him, so he left. Eric Black took over, and then he was kind of a stop start career then at Cov, really. I was kind of in and out of the team. Then Peter Reid come in, Mickey Adams come in, who I didn't really get along with, and then he went, Ian Dabby come in, and then Ian Dabby come in, he kind of changed it then. I'd played 120 games. It was always an up and down. I weren't really, the start of my career, I played Gary McAllister 15, and then I played 45 games the next season. Then from then it was like 20s and 30s for the next four or five seasons.
Is it hard getting on board then with different coaches, with different outlooks and different
I think it was
styles.
A tough period for Cov because just got relegated from the Premier League. That was my first year as a scholar. So then it was all financial. I remember players having to take pay cuts from the Premier League money. All the Premier League players kind of went away then. And it was tough. We'd never really had a settled manager. Locker played with some fantastic players. Dealey had a bowler, Stern John, Gary McSheffries, who've played here, Steve Staunton, Julian Joachim, Richard Shaw, John Eustace. I was really fortunate to play with some top players at the time.
That team had never come down, weren't they?
Yeah, that's what I mean. They were always there or thereabouts, always stayed up, always done really, really well. Was it typical? Because it probably helped me get into the team because they got relegated my first year as a scholarship, basically. I joined 16, 17 when they just got relegated. So I think it probably helped me get into the first team quicker. Probably if it's the Premier League, you know, they've got money to go and spend on. I mean, they had like Yusuf Chippo from Morocco, Mustafa Hadji and stuff as well, top players. Would I have probably got into that? Probably not, and I'd gone on loan elsewhere. My career might have been different. So it fell right for me at that time. A lot of young players then got into the team, like Gary McSheffries of the world, Chris Kirkland's of the world, got into the team because they got relegated. But again, then they moved stadium, obviously. And then obviously since they've had problems with that, haven't they, moving to Northampton and going back. And they've only last two or three years
here for a bit.
It's only the last couple of years that they've actually settled down. Now they own the stadium and now they're settled. There's no surprise why they're actually doing really, really well. A bit like Birmingham City now. It's been up and down with them. Now they're actually settled. It's no coincidence that they're on in the right trajectory.
That's so stability.
That's absolutely. So it was tough at Cov at that time, and since it's been tough at Cov, but you know, luckily they've turned it around now.
Yeah. Tell us about that 6-2 last game at Oldfield Road.
Yeah, it was class.
Like the absolute Robin Van Persie off it. Oh. It looked a little cute first. It was first touch.
Unbelievable. To be fair, again, I was on the bench that game, kind of in and out of the team. Newish manager. Because I was the young lad as well, come through the academy, you kind of get beaten with the same brush. It's kind of like, you know, they'd rather bring someone else in. It's always the young lad's fault. That's how it felt with me, yeah. Especially at Cov. I always felt it was, you know, if there's someone going on, it's always like blame the ones who've come through the kind of system or whatever. Whether that's right or wrong, that's just right.
Come from the top or from the fans or
I think the fans are brilliant because they, you know, like they want to see one, like, you know, one of their own come through, don't they? But I think it's more like the managers that come in. Peter Reid come in, did the same, but right back in straight away. We've even seen me play. Mick Adams kind of done the same. So it's kind of in that team, but starting on the bench that game, unbelievable day. You know, the sun was shining, packed crowd. We were struggling at the time. I think we needed to win to pretty much stay up. I think Derby were in the playoffs. Pesci Salido played, some top players. I don't think Ravanelli was there then, but he'd come after. But they had a really good team. Ian Taylor from the Villa, he played that day. I was on the bench, yeah. I think must have been 5-2 up at the time. I think I've just come on as a right winger, just to kind of shore.
I was going to say, you didn't come on as right.
Nah, kind of shore it up, lines in, yeah. just to, I'm a right back, but kind of shore it up down the right-hand side. I've ran straight on. The throw-in's come to me, but the defender's nicked it. So he's got there first. He's gone back to the thrower, then he's gone round the back through Steve Staunton, I think it was, through Marcus Hall. He's played a ball down the side to Dealey, I think, or Stern John. I think Stern John's in the middle of the pitch. Dealey's out wide. Anyway, the ball's come in. It's missed Dealey, and Stern John's gone off for the header. I think it's clipped off Mo Konyic, who ultimately, I think he played for Coventry at the time, but he's flicked it on, and it's just fouled him on the edge of the box. And I couldn't have hit it any sweeter, really. I think it took a slight nick, but it weren't, you know, deviating from the top corner anyway. I think Michael Johnson, the old blue nose here, to be fair, I think it nicked off him slightly. So, yeah, just went straight in the top corner. Pandemonium then, because it was my second goal of my career. I'd scored against Nottingham Forest earlier, but this was just seemed like a big goal. The day, you know, Jimmy Hill was singing all that before the game.
He's in front of your fans as well.
Yes, it was, yeah. So that's what I mean. I didn't know what to do. So yeah. I kind of scored it. I knew my family were in the sort of far corner. So I've ran around the goal, obviously, and everyone's put their arms out. So I'm like literally high-fiving everybody. You know, I was a guest at the Cov game last week, and they're called the Mad Hatters. They've got like these hats on and scarves. You'll see them on the front row. And they were there. They were like, can we recreate that photo? So I'm there with my arm out, and they're like their arm out, recreating a photo just literally last week. Just obviously, you know, it was just a great day. The scene's a legend. I've just kind of, I've made it to the corner. My family up there, I like kind of gestured to my family. Then I just remember the lads just coming. I think they were laughing. I think they were just, what has just happened? You have you just smashed it in the top corner. Stern John's got his arm around me. The lads are going, fucking, you deserved that. I don't know why, but they were like, McSheffrey's come over, Dealey's come over. And I think Gary McSheffrey's a little bit gutted because he's the local lad. I think he wanted to score that last goal. And, you know, me being from Birmingham, they don't really like us today, to be fair. They don't really like
Gary. And then ironically, he ends up here.
Absolutely.
A cult hero
here. Yeah, they don't really. Yeah, so it is kind of, he's fucking done it instead of me kind of thing. But yeah, I think they were just shocked. And I remember just after the game, didn't think of anything. I think he just scored a goal. It was a sick goal. Do you know what I mean? It's not like an important one. Then we're doing it's our last home game, obviously, doing a lap of honour around the pitch. And Richard Shaw's, you've just scored the last goal at Highfield Road. And he just clicked there. And I was like, oh, brilliant. That's class. Didn't really mean anything of it. But every year, I think
folklore.
February, well, whatever it is, April the 20th, something, I'll retweet it or I'll share it.
National Bingy Day.
Pretty much. Every time I go back to Carve, SA, or anyone really speaks about. I mean, I had a bit of a boring career, to be fair, after that. No promotions, no relegations, just kind of a mid-table mediocrity every year, really. And that was one of my highlights. So, it's still nice to go back. I went back, Cov Oxford, obviously played for both teams. You know, I get introduced onto the pitch at half-time. They played a goal on the big screens as well at the Rico, which... it's brilliant. Hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Not on my head, obviously, but on the back of my neck, standing up. And it was a surreal moment just to be. And then obviously clap the fans. Oxford fans were clapping. And just to see that goal again, you know, packed out sort of Highfield Road.
Class.
It was, really
pause
really
from everyone in the stadium. What's your goal again on the big screen?
It was unbelievable. That's what I mean.
So like, to do with it, yeah.
And I'm not a club legend or anything like that. I didn't really do anything. You know, we didn't win anything at the time there, but...
Quick shout out to Brumlife, our sponsor, for entertainment, news, everything Birmingham. Go check them out on the socials. Search for Brumlife. Cheers.
So your Wikipedia says at Oxford, you're a cult hero.
Yeah.
That is spelt right, isn't it?
Yeah. To be fair, I mean...
hero.
Like, even things like, I think because I'm a fan, because I'm quite a down-to-earth, chatty kind of person, I speak to kind of anyone, I think I have that connection, even the manager now, you know, I try and get a connection with the supporter straight away because, you know, I think one, it gives you more time. But I was a player, wear my heart on my sleeve, you know, just graft really. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't the best football player ever. You know, I just got through my career. I played 400 games in my career just because I grafted. I'd done everything for my team. That's why I had so many operations, broken noses. I just put my body where it hurt, basically. And I think that's why, you know,
fun
even I was at Leyton Orient for 10 months and they absolutely loved me. I was at Brighton for 4 years and, you know, exactly the same there at Oxford. Even going back at Cov now, I scored a goal there, but they still kind of, you know,
we've had this before at times. So. See the honesty and the guile and the whole kind of commitment to the cause. That
yeah, absolutely.
Pitch,
yeah.
It's like, and from a fan's point of view, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah,
know,
of course.
And
I think I've took that into my managerial career as well. I think if you see, man, I'm ready. You know, my last win for Barrow was against my best mate Matt Sadler at Warsaw, and he said something after about 2 minutes, and I wanted to volley his head off him. I was like, even though he's my best mate from 4 years old, I'm here to win. Do you know what I mean? And I think. I'm exactly the same. Obviously, I love him to bits. I wouldn't have done that, but he wound me right up. I was like, and we were like, literally going at each other on the sideline.
Well, I suppose he knows that's out of your strings.
Yeah, that, probably does. Yeah. And I was like, that's not you. Why would you say that? And we were kind of like arguing. But that's how I am on the sideline. Anyway, I think I live it and breathe it, heart on my sleeve. I got booked quite a lot in my career. I've got booked quite a lot as a manager as well. I just can't help it.
Any sendings off?
I had three as a player, I think I did.
I don't know, you got away with that one. We spoke about that pie.
Yeah, oh, well, that was a red card, wasn't it?
Was it? Oh, yeah. Yellow?
No, I think it should have been a yellow, but he gave a red.
Because it was grindy quality.
But saying that, it cost me. I mean, but it cost me move to Leeds United. I was at Brighton at the time. I got player of the season, I think 2008. Leeds United wanted me, but I'd got 11 yellow cards. I mean, I played 46 games. I got, so it's only one in four, really. But I got 11 yellow cards, and I got a red card right at the end of the season for something stupid. And they were concerned. That was the only concern they had. And I missed out on a move to Leeds because of that. I ended up, and they were in the same league, but Leeds were in League One at the time. Massive football club, obviously. They're trying to get back to
a couple of years before the
team. I think Gary McAllister was the manager there at the time, so I think it was because of that. But then, or something like that. And I missed out because of my sort of disciplinary record at the time because I had 11 yellow cards. But I think one in four, one in five is not too bad. You know what I mean? For a fullback.
That's a great goal scoring record. I don't mean.
Yeah.
Get it all mixed up.
So, I mean, I ended up staying another 2 years then at Brighton, which was. Those probably 2 years were.
Was that Mickey Adams again at Brighton?
Yeah. I remember. I just didn't get on with him, and he sent me to Brighton basically on loan. I was playing in the COF first team, and then I got a phone call from Brighton saying, "You joined us on loan." I was like, "Hang on a minute, I'm just playing the Championship for COF on Saturday. Let me speak. No one's told me." So I went in, Mick Adams weren't there.
Oh, so that's the first time you heard it. Someone called from Brighton saying,
yeah,
you're coming
the
down.
Assistant manager from Brighton said, I was on my way into training. he went, oh, this is Dean White from Brighton over Albion. They're in League One at the time, covering the champ. I've just played. We played Plymouth on a Saturday. So I think this is like Wednesday or Thursday or something what it is, or Tuesday after that game. You're coming to Brighton. I was like, am I? Let me go and speak to the manager. He wasn't there. So then I spoke to the assistant manager. He was like,
no GDPR back then?
He was like, oh, I don't know anything about it. So then he phoned the Mickey Adams and went, oh, yeah. I just think it'll be good for you. It's my old, because he was there as before. My old club, really good club. I think it'd be good for you. And I was just like, oh, right, okay then. I'll see you later.
It'd be nice to have a...
Yeah, so I went. First time I've been away from home, so I've gone from the lodge in Coventry. I've got my own place in Solihull now. I'm travelling back and forth to Cov. You know, it's half an hour, 20 minutes on the road. Brilliant. So it's the first time I've moved away in a hotel. First time I've been to a different football club. Absolutely loved it. 3 or 4 months there. What a place, Brighton!
Not the worst place to get.
Oh, unbelievable! Met great friends down there. Then come back to Cov. So this was September, October. Come back to Cov around Christmas time. They were struggling. They needed me back. I was a bit gutted at the time because I was like really enjoying it at Brighton.
How did you find out you were going back to Cov? Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was. Yeah. Like, again, communication weren't great. I just like, you got to come back. No problem. Went back. I think he was under pressure at the time. Played a couple of games, done all right. He got sacked then at Cov. Ian Dowie come in. My contract was up at the end of the season. Didn't renew it. That's probably one of the hardest conversations I've had. Like, I mean, he's basically being released. Him and Tim Flowers were like, where you are now. I've been there since I was 12. I'm like 23 now. I've played, 100 and odd games. You know, it was the right time for me to leave. I don't get me wrong, but it's not nice.
Do you get that
it.
Kind of conversation that you like after you can plead your...
No.
Decision's already made by the time you're in.
Yeah. Decision's already been made. So, I played... There's still about 10 games a season left when I had this conversation. So, you get through to the end of the season. And then Brighton wanted me in the summer. Brilliant. Dean Wilkins is the manager. Ray Wilkins is his younger brother. Top coach, loved it. Yeah, signed for them, brilliant. Played that one season, young team, all pretty local, brilliant experienced players. Absolutely loved every minute of it. Loved living down there. I played really well. I'm living in the marina down there, which is just like, you don't see much water around here apart from around here or a canal. So it's like, I want to be right by the sea. Class.
It's good on the last one.
Oh, brilliant. It's really like real good city. I've made some really good friends down there. And then he got sacked. We went to Magaluf, as you do, end the season. Saw everyone a piss, whatever. This is right at the end of the season, so like a week's gone and we're in Magaluf, or 3 or 4 days of the season's gone. Managed to get, and then we, on the plane backwards, you're rough, aren't you? I've just had 3 or 4
Everyone's
days.
Everyone's got a Magaluf cough.
3 or 4 days on a piss. You know, you're rough. And one of the lads said, Dean's been sat, Mickey Adams has got the job. And I was like, fuck off.
You're in the horrors anyway.
So I'm like, what is happening? We're, I think we're flying over the Alps at the time. I'm like, what is happening here? He got rid of me basically. And now I'm loving it here. Dean Wilkins, we've finished 7th, 8th in the league, just outside the playoffs, which at the time we're overachieving. This was just before Tony Bloom, the chairman, the owner, now he's come in. We're overachieving. I couldn't believe it. Like he'd come in and I was like, what's gonna happen now? Do you know what I mean? First conversation is like, you know, I want a key and all that sort of stuff. But you just know, don't you, that this is just ain't going to work out. In that season, he brought Robbie Savage in. Great guy, to be fair. Real top guy. Weren't great as a player at the time. I think he was coming to the end of his career. And it just didn't work out. Mickey Adams eventually got sacked. But in that time, I was in and out of the team. I was starting, then he took me out of the team. We're kind of not seeing eye to eye. I think I went to him and said, look, it's just not working, me and you. And this is probably the first conversation where I've grown a bit of balls, basically, for the first time.
Let's have a chat.
Yeah, because it's only going one way. Anyway, give me a month. And I was like, okay, I'll just stick out for a month, just get through it. It was pretty brutal. We were struggling massively. We had a good team, but we were struggling. And eventually got sacked in the February time. And it's kind of a relief for me, really. So I was able to stay. Russell Slade come in, absolute legend of a guy. We managed to stay off. Great escape that season. Brilliant. I signed that was the summer with Leeds thing. That didn't come off, so I signed another 2-year deal. Unfortunately, again, didn't have a good start. Got injured. Russell Slade got sacked. Gus Poyet come in. And then he brought a lot of foreign players in. And then
tell us about Poyet.
What kind of days were numbered there?
Yeah. We've heard some stories about him as a coach. What was he like?
Again, pretty ruthless, brutal. His pre-season was probably the worst pre-season I've ever had. It was tough.
Yeah.
Running.
Was Marcus there with you?
Paints was there sort of towards... Marcus was there towards the end of my sort of career. I think Gus had brought him in. Glenn Murray was there, so Tommy Alfick was there. We had some real good footballers there at the time. Brutal. Timing was horrendous for me. I just done my first groin or my second hernia operation, but it was taking a lot longer. It took me like 3-4 months to get back. My first game was Southampton away on the TV. It was his first game back. My first game back from being 4 months out, got through that game. We won 2-1 live on Sky TV. It must have been an international break, so we were on Sky. Brilliant. 1-2-1. Next game was, I think, Norwich. It was like a Johnson's Paint game, like a shit game, but I played in it. I should never have played in my groins. I had the worst feeling the other night after a five-a-side. But a feeling the same there. I was like, I'm struggling here. I shouldn't have played that game. Then we played Norwich, who were top of the league, the next game. Lost 4-1, and I was really struggling. And then we played Leeds at home. I was second in the league, lost 2-0. And them three games, he'd made his mind up, and kind of that was it. I was done for then.
Did you tell the coach that time, or did you keep it to yourself because you want to be playing?
Looking back, I should have said. I think that's probably what made me kind of ended up retiring, because my hips and groin, I just played because I thought if I say I'm not not fit enough to play. I'll come out of the team. Someone else goes in.
And it's a testament to the kind of player.
Yeah, know. I might not get back into the team. I was like, I'm actually fine. When really, I was struggling. I remember that Leeds game in the warm-up, I was thinking, I'm fucked here. And he's a Fabian Delph.
In the warm-up.
Fabian Delph got bought from the Villa. That he scored an absolute worldie. Martin O'Neill was there. He got bought for $8 million that day or the next day. And I'm playing against players like that, and I'm fucked. I think Snodgrass was on the left-hand side. So I've got Snodgrass, Fabian Delph, and I'm struggling here. My groin's in tatters. And then we lost 2-0. It weren't even like my fault. The goals really, but I think I got took after an hour. I was spent. And then that's pretty much the ending of me there at Brighton. Ended up going on to Leyton Orient, which was brilliant. Loved it. Played Arsenal and stuff in the FA Cup, fifth round at the Emirates and stuff. I loved it. But yeah, that was kind of the end of my career, really. And he was like, I went in and seen Gus Poyet, and he was brutal. Like, absolutely, like, basically, you're not good enough. I'm bringing someone else in. He was that sort of straight laced about it. I'm a manager now. You kind of not you've got to be brutally honest, but you kind of be nice about it, if you know what I mean. He was just like, yeah, you're like, no, not good enough for me. You can see you later, kind of thing. And another one again, like in the summer. So my number was number 2. He got one of the coaches to phone me up and said, we're taking the number. So I had another year left. So this was coming to the end of the season. I hadn't really played that much. I'd still had another year left on my contract. Phoned me in the summer and said, we're going to take the number 2 off you. Got a coach, didn't even do it himself. So you'll come back pre-season, but basically you're not really needed.
That's how you're told done. Without being told.
Yeah. Your number 2 is taken off you. I basically trained. I didn't play with the first team in through pre-season. I played with like the B team, or what you'd call now the 23s or whatever. Luke Williams is a coach who's now the coach of Peterborough. He's been a nuts carry. He was like the 23s coach. He was absolutely brilliant for me. Kept me sane because I'd lose him yet at the time. But I think because of how well I handled it, I didn't moan, kick up a fuss. I kind of forced my way back into the first team. I was on the bench for the first game of the season from absolutely nowhere. I think I played the cup game. But then I was done then. I think I went to Leyton Orient and I spent the rest of the season there. And, I enjoyed that. And then at the end of that season, I moved to Oxford. And then I had a great time at Oxford. And then I finished my career there. So, yeah, he was brutal, to be fair to him.
He was that kind of player as well, though.
Yeah, he was, horrible, yeah.
Yeah. But also fucking brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
South America.
Oh, brilliant. Don't get me wrong. Like, really good coach. Didn't really,
way of doing it,
hasn't yeah, yeah. Didn't really get on. He's sort of assistant Tarico. I think he played for
Mauricio.
Tottenham, didn't he?
Oh, so had a Uruguayan and an Argentinian.
Yeah,
why?
And he didn't really speak much English, but he just the look of him, he's like.
I think Martin said before that Tarico just like smash.
Absolute pitbull. And then
he'd give you the looks.
Yeah, so he's battering me. He's staring at me thinking like, you know,
you're
just
not gonna get out.
Yeah, I'm like, done. What is happening here? Do you know what I mean? My groins are in tatters. I've tried to do the best thing for you.
And he's ended up by a Uruguayan and stared up by an Argentinian.
It's ended up killing me. So I was like, just get me out of here. It kind of ended a bit sourly there, to be fair. And I kind of lost money from it because I got paid up, but not paid up what I should have been paid up because I didn't kick it before, so I weren't really. But I wanted to play games of football. I went to Leyton Orient on about 150 quid a week in this is League One. Players were on 2-3 grand a week. I've gone because I've been paid up there, even though. So I've had to rent my place out in Brighton. Then I've had to. London is ridiculous.
I was going to say, it's East London as well.
East London. So they put me in a Marriott, you know, the Marriott at Waltham Abbey. It's like Junction 26. So we trained about 20 minutes from there. Leyton Orient's about half hour from there. I was there for like 3 months, but they kind of like chucked me out of it. So you've got to find yourself somewhere to live. So I just walked down to Waltham Abbey, found a bed sit basically, and I just right. And I actually lost money playing for Leyton Orient, but just to get my sort of career back on track. You don't really hear these stories anymore. Obviously, the money that players are on, a lot of players are just sit and take the money. Now, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to play games. And it was the best thing I did because I enjoyed my time there, loved Leyton Orient, loved the fans, people. we went from 19th to just missing out of the playoffs in 8 months. We played some unbelievable football. Harry Kane played for us.
Tom Carroll
come from Tottenham, had a real good time. Beat a championship club in the third round, beat Norwich in the third round, the FA Cup, beat Swansea away in the fourth round, and we got Arsenal at home, drew 1-1. We scored a last minute equaliser and got a replay at the Emirates, which is fucking brilliant. I was playing against Arshavin that day. A little bit like the Tirico story there, where I just stared at him, bored, thinking, like, breathing heavily, thinking I'm going to smash any time. He was shit scared. I don't think he wanted the ball the whole game. You know, Premier League, I think he just scored four at Anfield for Arsenal.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
It was the game after.
Jeez.
And he's thinking, he's gone from there, nice game, I've scored four, to some bald fucker wants to actually kill him. He looked petrified. And we managed to get a draw at a, you know, we lost 5-0 the Emirates, but it was great, obviously great. We took 9,000 fans there. Great day. And it was, even though I was on like pittance, I'm literally out of pocket all the time playing for them. I had a fantastic time, and it got me a move to Oxford. Then it kind of got my career back on track. Then I was kind of back to earning half decent money. Well, still weren't great, but half decent money at Oxford. And
Not losing money.
Yeah. I was able to then move back home. So it was like an out-week car shared. Asa Hall, who used to play for, he come through the academy here. He played for Oxford, so I card shared with him from Birmingham. So I was able to live back home for the first time in years, which was nice. Just starting a family as well. My wife, or just had a baby at the time. So it all kind of fitted in perfectly. So I was kind of back on track then.
But yeah, so into management.
Yeah.
So obviously we've got notes here. The brilliant job at Solihull, but it started, was it from Kidderminster? Was Banbury your first actual
manager's job? Yeah. So kind of, retired at Oxford. Again, I had four operations in a year. I was done, to be fair, but they kind of took it out of my hands and offered me like a coach's job, an under-18s job. Nothing I'd ever really thought of, because I was only 30, 31. You still think you're going to get to 35. He's like that magic number as a footballer. I was never going to get there. My groins were fucked, to be fair. My hips were
crawling to the finish line.
Yeah, I was taking tablets. And eventually it just gave way. My groin ripped off the bone. Ended up having four operations then because of that. And people like we were saying earlier, like Chris Wilder, I was his go-to. I played every single game under him. So I was just a bit like that. What I said about Brighton, I was literally just couldn't even warm up. I was just tablets. When the game kicked off, I was absolutely sound. It took me 4 days to recover, play the next game. And then it just carried on until it just went. So I wouldn't say it was a relief. I remember going on an MRI scan. I went under it. I was there for 5 minutes. I'm quite claustrophobic anyway. I was just like, I'm done. Like, get me out of here. I never want another scan again on my groins or whatever. And it kind of just went there. So, but I think because of how I played for my Oxford career, again, I was pretty well liked within the manager, the chairman, Daryl, who's now at Solihull. Mark Ashton, the CEO, who's at Ipswich now, he's had a great career since, wanted me to stay, which is brilliant. It's great for me, like, to be around it. So I ended up being under 18s coach. I was around the first team. My mates were still playing in the first team, so it was the next best thing. Money was poor, really. So eventually it came to a point where I couldn't keep traveling down to Oxford, an hour and a half every day, because I'm not a player anymore. I'm doing different times of players. I've got a proper job now. I'm like leaving at 6-7 in the morning, I'm finishing at 5-6 at night. As a footballer, you finish it.
That's hard traffic down to Oxford then.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially that Bicester turn off going into the A34, it was a nightmare every day. But I'm on my own every day. I'm not great money, but it was the start of a new career for me. Enjoyed it, but I missed the kind of winning 3 points, men's football, yeah, all that sort of stuff. It's great coaching the kids. We got some, we sold a couple of them for a couple of millions who we'd bought in. One went to Shandon. We're going from like college football. I think we sold him for 2.5 million or something to Brentford, which was great. So I had a really good time there. And then I think Colin Gordon at Kidderminster with UCD, they called me and said, do you want to come and run their 23s program, but be involved with the first team? I was like, oh, that's brilliant. I can learn off UCD. I know UCD.
And also local again.
Yeah, local. The money was still the same, so not great, but I think we're just having our third child, so it was back home, not down the road. But the 23s program, it was like a college program. It was terrible. But I was basically what we used to as well, but because they changed on different days, I was doing 6 days a week, long days, traveling up and down the country, obviously with the first team. Then obviously, you know, they'd have that day off, but I'm back in with the 23s. It was good in the terms of learning off Houston, the contact with Houston and his staff, learning how they worked and whatever, watching games differently. Now I'm back in around men's football, and I think it kind of made me want to then be a manager. Then I went back. My headspace still weren't great because I've gone from a freshman footballer. Don't really know what my purpose is, what I'm doing now, really. Do I want to be a manager? Do I want to be a coach? Money's not great. Being an 18s coach, got a family to provide for, etc. So then I moved to Coventry under 18s. I thought, fuck it, I used to play with a car, roll a red carpet out, you know. But it wasn't that. It was pretty much same as Oxford, but separate. You know, first teams at the Lodge, we're at a completely different venue. I was there for a year and a half. I spoke to Mark Robbins for 15 seconds in a year and a half. Didn't really see the first team. Never really was at the Lodge. My first real hand of the football industry, of people stepping on people's toes to get jobs. The kind of ruthless nature of it a little bit as well.
Yeah.
And really seen that before, because I'd been at Oxford where I knew everyone. The real good, you know, good people. I'm not saying he's a bad people, but kind of young people who, to get, because they didn't have like a footballer's background that I did, I've kind of got a leg up in that. Their leg up was to be ruthless, to kind of step on people's toes, to know people, kind of network and all that sort of stuff. I'm not saying fake, and I'm not saying you have to be fake to network, but it's just not my kind of style. I don't want to do something to get something out of people. I just want to, you know,
it's a sales kind of thing.
And
sales oriented.
That was kind of what it was. And I was like, this isn't for me. The Banbury job came up and I didn't even look to get it. I didn't really search for it.
Where was your badges wise this time?
I'd done my A license. So I was pretty, I've come out of it. I've done my UEFA B straight away. Then I went straight onto my A license. So I was set in terms of my coaching badges to go into it.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't, at the time, I didn't know who I was going to go into it. And it just come out of the blue. I got a phone call, do you want it? I was like, are you still looking? I needed to go for an interview and all that sort of stuff. I was like, yeah, why not? It's in Oxfordshire. So I've got contact with Oxford United. When I was at Oxford, we sent lads out on loan to them, all that sort of stuff. So something that I'd want to go into. You say you want to be a manager, but you're not, you know, I had no experience in it, no experience in the level. I'd played Championship, League One, League Two, no experience in non-league at all, part-time, all that sort of stuff. So I kind of accepted the job, bought an Oxford legend, James Constable, with me as assistant manager. He played as well. I thought that was a good buy-in to get me the job as well. And then it was just learning on a job. I know, like, COVID, obviously, is a roundabout to say lucky, but lucky it was COVID, because I had 13 games that season before it got curtailed. And I learned a lot in them 13 games, where what I needed to do, how I wanted the club to run, you know, because I was new into it. I didn't really know. I was like, didn't know the league, didn't know the players, didn't know the level, all that sort of stuff. And I learned a lot. And then the chairman at the time was like, we need big, strong, physical players, experienced players to get in, do well in this league. I was like, nah, no chance. We need the opposite. Young, hungry, energetic players. Ideally, who don't work. So they're not going to work and then playing on a Tuesday night, tired, all that sort of stuff. We won the league by 20 points, successful. Made it as professional as we could. So I bought a head of recruitment in. I'm training on a Tuesday, Thursday. Obviously, we're playing match on a Saturday. How am I going to see players? Usually, you just get mercenaries. You just get players who go from one club to another, and just to pick up money. I was like, I don't want that. We want players who are going to go and
it's unheard of to bring in a head of the group.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was pretty. It was relatively new, but
how's that go with the owner? Obviously, you need budget for that.
Well, we didn't have owners. It was a supporters-owned football club, volunteers. So this kind of chairman, secretary, all them, the money man, they were all volunteers. So the money was just coming in from sponsorship in the club, and they worked so hard, to be fair. And I think we just had a vision, and they bought into it. We had a budget, and I said I'll take money out of the budget to get this person in. We had pre-match as well on a Saturday morning. We paid 170 quid for like toast and beans and scrambled egg and what that, like a local hotel, which is nothing really, but it made us look professional. The lads bought into it. I don't think we barely lost the home game then. I think we lost
sitting down together.
It looked professional. Mm. Instead of meeting at 1:30 for a 3 o'clock game and lads are being late or whatever, and they're not turning up till 2:45, we're there at 11:30. We eat together. We're chatting together. I go through the game plan, all that sort of stuff. We barely see each other through the week because we're only training sort of Tuesday or Thursday. And we got some really good players in, and it just literally hit off. We won the league.
That's the first ever promotion.
First ever time being promoted. We got to the FA Cup first round, first time in 50 years, and the second time in our history. So it kind of just clicked. It worked. The next season, we went to the National League North for the first time. We stayed up, which was brilliant. We got to the first round again. Got on ITV. Ian Wright was there. I got there with 300-400 fans in the ground. We were sold out that day for 2,500. We're on TV. They managed to buy and they built a new stand out of it from the, wow, obviously the money. So it from a little sort of community club, we grew it massively. But it come to a point where after that second seat, so I've been there 3 years now. So the first one, COVID, second season, like pissed the league, eat like 100-odd points. Third year, was staying in the National League, which is a great achievement, FA Cup run. They kind of went, oh, breathe. And I was like, nah, we have to move on to stay here. You can't, like, if you're doing that now, we're going to get relegated next season. We need to move the club on. And I didn't get that. They weren't ready to do that. Probably didn't have the money to do that.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, we're going to get relegated. It's only going to harm me. So I kind of need to move on. So I was gutted at the time because, you know, we took the club on so much. So I resigned. Didn't have a club to go to. I was taking a massive risk and a gamble, really. But at least I knew now I've been pretty successful as a manager.
Stocks hard.
I'd kind of earned my stripes. You know, you get... Like Gary McSheffrey went straight into League Two, had pretty bad experience, has never managed again. And he's obviously a good friend of mine, and I didn't want that to happen to me. So I've started low. It's a tough way because it's a long way to go to get to where you want to get to. But I learned a lot from it, successful, and now I can start building. And luckily, Daryl, who was at Oxford now, the Solihull Moors chairman, called me in the summer, do you want to take this job? It was kind of a bit of a dream for me because my local team, I could live at home. It's in the National League. They're pushing to get into the Football League. Can I be the first person to do that? No brainer for me. It wasn't about money. Again, money weren't. I was probably one of the poorest paid managers in the National League at the time. But I had a great job. I could live at home. I live two minutes around the corner, so I was literally 2 minutes. I can get to the ground. They're training in Studley, which is 20 minutes away. Unbelievable training facilities, like probably better than most League One, League Two. I went to Barrow, had no facilities. So for Solihull to have the infrastructure they did, brilliant. The remit that year was to finish mid-table. And again, had an unbelievable season. Ended up going to Wembley twice, playoff final. Probably the worst, probably the worst thing I've probably ever faced in football that day, I think. Mm.
I was at Moors. We were doing that. We had a charity thingy, didn't we? The Moors Foundation. We were at Forbes Side at Moors that day. Tell us how that happened, man. How that unfolded.
Well, to be fair, I think we didn't expect it. Like the remit was 12th, mid-table, and then the next year, can we get into the playoffs? So it kind of accelerated, really. We started like on house on fire. We're top of the league with the first 10, 15 games. Then we kind of struggled a little bit. The teams with a bigger budget started then getting up right on there. Chesterfield blew the league away that season.
Salford at those
odds. Yeah, they'd gone up the year before. I think so. With Chesterfield, Barnet, Bromley.
Yeah.
And you look at them three clubs now, they're all top 10 now in League Two. So we're competing with them and we're right up there. We sold our best player in January. We're kind of like, now we're on the cusp. What do? Do we go for it? Do we kind of just wait till next season? We changed shape. We bought a couple of players in. And it just changed just instantly. We were unbelievable then. Went to the end of the season, absolutely flying into the playoffs. Didn't expect it. Brilliant. Just see where it takes us. First game, we got messed around a bit, I think, because we're supposed to play Gateshead. They got booted out. Then we had to play Halifax. So it was all a little bit up in the air. But we played Halifax, beat them at home. Then on the Saturday, we're playing Barnet away, who are second in the league, top team. And we drew both games in a season. They were massive favourites in the semi-final. It went game plan, everything went spot on, 1-4-0. We were unbelievable. Everything that we spoke about, the lads did. Everything we touched, scored. It was just one of them games where, probably my best game as a manager, everything just went right for us.
What's like your half-time talk then? Like, you're trying not to look all up?
We were 2-0 up at half-time and it was like...
The most dangerous score, isn't it?
They're good. So it was like, they can easily score three goals. I think the worst thing we could have done is sit back, protect the 2-0 lead. Let's try and get the third goal. And we did. We went on to win 4-0. Unbelievable. Wembley. God, what? We'd already reached Wembley once. We'd already played Bromley in a semi-final of the FA Trophy. Got to Wembley. So after that game, we're like, we're at Wembley twice in a week. I mean, that is... in my career, I got the closest I got to was... the Johnson's Paint Trophy or the EFL Trophy, lost on penalties to Luton in the semi-final for Brighton. As a player, that's probably the most heartbreaking game because you're that close from Wembley and it gets taken away for your fucking penalties. And then we go to Wembley, Bromley. They're a good team, top striker. Again, game went really well, to be fair, 2-2. It could have gone either way. They started really well, but we got back into the game 2-2 to penalties. And, it's luck of the draw. Like the Blues yesterday against Leeds, it's luck of the draw. You can train for it. You can not train for it. I don't think it matters. And unfortunately, we lost, I think, two of the lads missed the penalties. They scored all theirs, and it was just absolutely gutting. I think because I was desperate to go off for Daryl because I know how much money and time and all the, it's a skeleton sort of staff there. So it's kind of what they put a lot of work in hours, and I was just devastated for them. It's probably the worst dressing room I've been in after the game. Like, what do you say? I've got the chairman behind me. It's like, what do you say? You're at Wembley, unbelievable. Like, I think you look back, unbelievable achievement to get there. I mean, what an occasion.
Is that what you got to try and bring out then, just to try and bring the positives of the whole thing?
Yeah, you try to, but it's hard. You know, I've walked a team out of Wembley, like, I got nowhere near
as well.
I broke down the next day. Like, I was absolutely devastated. I'm not showing off to hide that. You know, I broke down in tears the next day. I was devastated, absolutely devastated. But then we got to go back to Wembley the next week. So we had a few days off. Coming on the Tuesday or Wednesday, the lads all come in again, still pretty good. I said, "Well, lads, we're not training today. We're going to go to the local pub. We're going to have a few drinks. Why? If you need to chat about it, we can chat about it. But just get it out of your system. Do you know what I mean? Because their careers. You know, they want to go into League Two. Their money would have gone up. My money would have changed drastically. It's like life changing money, really." And we've all missed out on that. Not so. It's not just the game, and we all want to be. We're all ambitious to get there, but you know, financially, you know, Matty would have changed my life, would have changed the players' lives, you know what I mean? And all that sort of stuff. So you're absolutely devastated. So we kind of just had a drink. I think it's called The Boot in Studley. We ran a corner from the training ground. We just walked there. Lovely day. We had a few beers outside. Everyone went home. Next day I was in training. Right, focus on the game. On Saturday, we're back in. Gateshead. Fucking same thing happened again, didn't it? 2-2. Should have won the game. We should have gone 3-1 up. We're 2-1 up. Cruising, really. They pegged us back 2-2. Back to penalties. And we'd done everything. We'd worked on it. We changed the penalty takers. We scored. I think, the first 4 or 5 of the day. The two penalty takers that had missed the previous week were on the pitch at the same time. And they had to take one. They both missed. So they missed the both weeks. Couldn't do anything about it. They just had to take because it had gone so far down the line. We'd left them this time because, you know, they must have been traumatic for them to go.
They're just watching, they're watching the goals going. No, need to get, oh my God.
Now it's coming to them. They've missed again. So they're, and it's happened again. Lost on penalties. And it's like, the chairman was all fuming after that because we should have won the game. We didn't. We lost on penalties. But I think what happened the week before, obviously, that had to play something. So the lads done so well to get themselves back up for it. More fans come to this one because I think they'd already got tickets. They didn't want to do the both. It was a great day for everyone, obviously, but we wanted to win the game. You know, I was gutted. I think the chairman was half fuming right after the game. I remember he was like, we should have fucking won that, blah, blah, blah. But then about half hour later, I'm on the coach. He texts me and said, forget about it. Do you know what I mean? Unbelievable achievement to get there, blah, blah, blah.
Again, it's a game changer for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's for everyone. He's in the same boat.
And I was gutted. I was more gutted for him than myself, really, because I know how much money he's put in. He's transformed the football club. Like, the training ground, the ground, he's brilliant now.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a big blue nose. You know, we had great sort of banter. You know, we're kind of like friends at the time. So it was kind of, I was gutted for him. But he texted me, I was on the coach. He said, everyone back to the ground. We'll have a drink. Do you know what I mean? We'll celebrate the season that we've had. I know ultimately we're all disappointed, but we've done fantastically well. No one expected it. We'll crack on next season.
Considering the objectives at the start of the season, you've voted.
So we went back to the ground, had a drink, etc. And then you kind of, but then the pressure's on now because you've done so well there. Now everyone expects.
Overachieving becomes the
given. He expects now to be top three, even though we're still, budget-wise, we're still eighth to 12th in the league. He's now putting a bit more pressure on. Every game is more pressure, and I felt it. You know, we was up and down. I said, even though we're still in the playoffs, every defeat seemed like the end of the world. It was really hard then. And again, I think we talked about it earlier. Sometimes your stock grows when you're not there. Obviously, when I left, you know, I had an opportunity then. Barrow come in, League Two. You know, I just missed out in the summer. This is an opportunity for me to be a league manager. I couldn't turn it down. You know, I think he was all fuming about it. I think his statement that he kind of, but I totally get it. Do you know what I mean? At the time, I was fuming with what the statement that got put out because I'd worked so hard and we were so close and I was devastated for them. But for my family, money-wise, again, the jump was massive. I'm a League Two manager, even though money's not everything, but, you know, I've got a family. Money's really good now. I'm a League Two manager. Since I started, you know, I've gone up 4 leagues in 4 years. It's just not many people have done that. Absolutely brilliant. And then Solihull kind of, I think the pressure I was under at the time, being in the playoffs, I think we were overachieving still. At the time, everyone thought we should have been higher, we should have been this. I think when I left and they kind of struggled from then, I think there was close to relegation than there were. And I think my stock rose from that then because of that, what we talked about earlier.
So just to jump in, that's all right. So I've got a bit of experience doing a bit of filming and stuff with Solihull after you went.
Yeah.
And I think you set a precedent because they tried to bring Matty Taylor afterwards.
Yeah.
And you set a precedent. You touched upon it earlier with what the way you played is... You used to come in, you used to be the face, you used to bring your family in, you used to just be yourself around it. And it's hard to replicate that with a new manager.
Yeah.
And part of my job, along with the guys there, was to try and raise Matty's profile and try and get Matty kind of all singing, all that's a bit more behind the camera and seeing what it's like. And I think that was the feeling afterwards, that you'd been such a great guy that you couldn't replicate that within, you've 2 minutes down the road, you love the club.
Yeah.
How can you then bring someone in?
I've come from part-time Banbury where you go and have a drink with the supporters after the game, the players are in there. And you look at Barnet do it now, they're in League Two, but they haven't changed that. They still go in the bar after the game. They're still, and I think you've got to have that connection. Everywhere I go, I'll be exactly the same there, because I think you've got to have that connection with supporters. And other managers aren't like that. Sads isn't like that at Walsall. He's a different personality to me. He manages it a completely different way. That's not wrong or right. That's just how he works. And I work is, I've got friends with Solihull Moors, so I go in the bar and have a drink with them, and supporters are there, and I'm the face of it, because the football manager is all you ever hear from as a supporter. And I think, when you leave and then that happened, it realised what a good job we did, which was great. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it didn't kind of materialise going into Barrow and how difficult that was. But it was still a great learning curve for me. I've still been pretty successful. Yes, and now it's like looking onto the next job. And I think my next job is probably less selfish now. I think I'll be more, it's got to be right for my family, got to be the right structure there. I've learned a lot. Your kind of desperation, so to speak, but my ambition to get into League Two was brilliant, was great. But then when you get there, it's like, swimming against the tide at times. It was hard. It was a real tough gig. It's a big jump in terms of the league's tough, really, really tough, big, strong, physical league. Demands are more, obviously. It was tough, but one that, I think we'd done really well in it. I thought we had really good spells. It was just really difficult in terms of injuries, players, training ground. We didn't train on grass for the last 2 months I was there. We're on like a crappy sort of AstroTurf and we're sharing it with kids and stuff. So there's loads of excuses there. But ultimately, they make the decisions. And I think the desperation to get there, and then it's when you get there, it's not that glamorous. It's kind of like, is that kind of what I need? I think I'd love to take, maybe a National League club, but take them into League Two. I think that'll be better. Look at Chesterfield, Cook, he's still there now. They're flying. Bromley, top of the league. Barnet, Dean Brennan, he's took from unbelievable jobs, and they're all in the top 10. And I think hopefully my kind of next job, I'll get that sort of stability one. Work-life balance is massive. I think now I've realised that, especially with young children, I missed the year of their kind of life, really. Let's be honest, because I wasn't really, when I come home, I weren't really there. I'm thinking about elsewhere. So I've learned a lot from that. And I'm just looking forward to the next one. And I've learned a lot, obviously, of what I've done in the last few years now. Definitely.
Brilliant.
Well, best of luck with that, mate.
Thanks, mate. We're going to do a quick fast fire, like one word answers before we go. Best player you've played with?
I think name is probably Harry Kane, but I think ultimately it's got to be, he was only like a young lad at the time, Gary McAllister. He was just top. He was the manager. Give me my debut, my first contract, and I was able to play with him for however long it was. Just a top guy, top manager, top player, everything about him.
Great standard.
I was going to say, that's not bad too, is it? Well, it could be Harry Kane, but no, I'll go Gary McAllister.
Toughest opponent you faced?
I mean, I can name drop again here and say Gareth Bale, but he was really young at the time. Yeah. So it wasn't a Gareth Bale who played.
Is that when he was left back?
He's playing left back. I got put to the right wing just because he was that good. Even at 17, he was that good.
Just double up on him.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable. I think if I look back now, and I couldn't give you a name, if I were look back at everyone I've played against, I'd go, well, bloody hell, I've played against him.
No wonder your groins were hanging off your bones.
That's what I mean. I think I've played against some, obviously, top strikers, even like people like Ravanelli and stuff, people like that. Just for now, I'll go Gareth Bale because it sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Ravanelli sounds quite good.
Yes, Ravanelli. Yeah, same vibes. Best dressing room character?
Pants. I'm just trying. I think the best probably point of my career was, I love Brighton. Like, people like Guy Butters, Kerry Mayo, Charlie Oatway. I don't know if you've heard some of his stories. You know, they were unbelievable characters. You know, you look at Richard Shaw back in Coventry City.
Anyone terrorise you in the changing room?
The only didn't terrorise me because I probably stayed that way. But Dean Oldsworth, obviously, he's from the Crazy Gang. And I think Craig Peed, obviously my sort of assistant manager, who's been with me now, he obviously played in the first team at Cov together. He put something in Dean Holdsworth's card, and if it was a fish or something like that, and then obviously you don't do that to Dean Holdsworth. He's been in the Crazy Gang, so then he's cut all his gear up, he's hid his car, he drove it somewhere, and all that sort of stuff. I'd probably say Dean Holdsworth is the most ruthless. Like, he's come from the Vinnie Jones. He was pretty ruthless, to be fair. And I never crossed. I was, like, I was at school, timid, stay out of trouble. Whereas Petey's probably the opposite of that. He's right in his face. And I don't know what he'd done to Dean Holdsworth, but Dino made sure that he got him back anyway. And I think things like that, putting fish in his car, cut his clothes up the lot. I think it was ridiculous, to be fair. So I'd say him.
Brilliant. Best moment in football, playing or managing?
Managing, obviously winning the league with Banbury, I think you always want to win something. As a player, I think last goal at Highfield Road, just because it was still talked about today. It's what a proper old stadium that, you know, the amount of players have played there, you know, some way better players than me. All the top players you can probably think of have played there, and I'm the one, some ginger lad from Birmingham. Has gone and scored the last goal there. So I think that's
from
probably...
From Birmingham
especially from Cobs, aren't they? Because they hate us, don't they? They do.
Almost see Gary McSheffrey still not looking at that.
Fuming, absolutely fuming as well. But for me to score that, that's probably the highlight of my career, yeah.
One word to describe football?
Ruthless. I love it. My whole life's football, watching it, obviously managing it now, coaching it, everything. But it's horrible. It's ruthless. And even like kids these days, you know, parents are ruthless now because they see the pound signs and what kids are going to get. You know, they're paying for extra training and all that sort of stuff. It's just, it's a tough industry. I was lucky because I'm the one in like 1% or that 0.01% who made it. It's managerial career. So I've got all that. But I wouldn't say I enjoy and like a lot of it. I don't. I think that's why I keep myself to myself. I go and do my job at the best of my ability. I get people around me I can trust who are good at their jobs. I go home. I think that's how I try and work it. I'm not going out there to network just to get something for me. I'm not like that because I don't trust many people in football. I think he's that ruthless.
People do trust you, put them in jobs to just be like, okay,
yeah, absolutely.
That's your reason.
Like, don't get me wrong, I've got so many friends from football. I still speak to them now, but there's very few people who I can count on, you know, one hand that, I'd take in the trenches with me. Just be that. And I think that goes with life, really, doesn't it? Your friends and family, you know. In jobs now, it's pretty ruthless. People are trying to earn more money, so they step on people's toes. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be put into that. I don't want a job where that, when I'm around that, I just want someone to want me. And I'll work my absolute bollocks off to make sure that I'm successful, you're successful. And we go home with friends, family, and it's kind of I know that's like the dream scenario, but that's how I play in my head. I'm not trying to step on anyone's toes.
You can sleep well at night. No,
absolutely, to get there. I'm not trying to... Look, I have to make ruthless decisions as well as a manager. I have to release people. I have to tell people we're going to go down this road, which is horrible. But I try and do it in a way where I'm honest.
Do you always do that yourself as well?
Yeah, I have to. You know, like the Mickey Adams, I'm getting a phone call from there. I'd rather some people just be honest. If I'm not good enough to tell me... Obviously, the extreme way, Gus Poyo just being brutally honest.
There's a fine middle ground.
I think doing it the right way is, you know, sometimes I'm always going to get it wrong, but you're always learning, but I'll try and do it the right way, how I'd want to be treated, so I can't go that route. But so, ruthless. I think is that that's the main word for it.
Yeah. And then just finally, just what's a bit of advice that you give to an aspiring Birmingham Brummie footballer, stroke manager? That's what's your life advice?
I mean, it's probably a tough question to ask. I think like just what I've just talked about,
just being
honest and treat people how you'd want to be treated. I think that's the best advice anyone's ever given me. And ultimately, you work hard, don't you? I think if you work hard, you get, and you do things the right way, the right people will find you. I think, you know, if you go down a different path, you might be successful in that period of time, but it's going to come back to hurt you. It's going to come back to bite you.
The universe finds a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I always think, look, I've met some really great people in football, away from football, just in life in general. I've been very, very lucky with my sort of my family, my friends, my upbringing from Cocksure Hill to Arden Forest to Coventry City, all the sort of knockbacks and stuff. I always had good people around me. I think, just treat people how you want to be treated. Like, I'm a heart on my sleeve. When the whistle goes, probably people think I'm an absolute numpty. I like that. They don't like me, but that's not me. That's me trying to win a football game. That's me being probably out of my comfort zone, being like ruthless. When that game's finished, and the manager comes in, I'm probably quite timid and shy. I'm kind of like, do you know what I mean? But I just respect people. I just want to get on with people, all that sort of stuff. Be that nice guy. I can go into a pub and speak to anyone. I'm humble enough to speak to anyone as well. I'm not arrogant or anything like that. I just treat people how I want to be treated. Work hard, go home, and kind of enjoy my life as well. I like going out, I like having a beer, I like horse racing, I like football, going to some mates with football. Love spending time with my family. Just like probably like you, I'm just normal guy that. Luckily enough, I've been a footballer and I'm doing something I love as day to day. So I'm just very, very lucky, really.
Thanks for your time, mate.
Tom, man. Cheers.
Good luck on your next job. I think you'll be like the team that we'll be looking out for.
That's what it is. My family and friends and that, we're mob-handed when we go to places. Like, I think that's what it is as well. Barrow was really far out of the way and they couldn't really come. Even my mum and dad pretty much come to most home games and stay. But like friends and that come to all games, even like people from Banbury who would come and watch me play. Do you know what I mean? It's great, isn't it? I think that's, again, that just leads on to the fact of if you're good and you're a good person, people will come and support you and follow you, and that's all you want, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, no, thanks for having me. This has been class. It's been brilliant. Thanks.
If you like this video, please do click to subscribe to the channel. We currently have 5,500 members, over 500,000 views. So, let's convert some views into memberships, and that will continue to enable us to bring great guests on and continue making great podcasts. Thanks.